My younger son was almost 2 years old. He developed life-threatening heart failure, totally out of the blue. He sounded very congested. His breathing sounded like wet sponges, and my wife and I took him to the doctor over and over again. And first he thought it, they said it was bronchitis or asthma, and prescribed this and that. Nothing really helped, and we knew something was really terribly wrong because I had been a paramedic, and I wrote some medical books, and my wife worked for a medical publisher, so we were smarter than the average bears, but we didn't know what was wrong. And the doctor sent us for a chest x-ray, sent Philly, and it was the first clue that I had that something was, how serious it was, when he called me on a Friday afternoon, and he said, want you to take Philly to see a pediatric cardiologist and get a echocardiogram, basically a sonogram of the heart. So I said, okay, first thing Monday morning, should I find somebody on a Saturday? And doctor said, right now, I want you to go right now. So we got in the car, went to Johns Hopkins, and they did an echocardiogram, put him right in intensive care. And they said that he had dilated cardiomyopathy. His heart had ballooned up and like an overinflated tire. A two-year-old's heart is about the size of a plum. It's the size of its fist. And his heart was the size of an adult's. His two-year-old's chest is about the size of a roaster chicken. And his heart had occupied 80% of his chest, a measure of its function. Every time a heart squeezes, it squeezes out about 70% of the volume it contains. They call it the ejection fraction. And Philly's ejection fraction was 17%. It was just barely pumping out. And he was very, very, very sick. And although we were at this world-renowned medical center with some of the finest and brightest doctors in the world, there was really very little they could tell us about dilated cardiomyopathy. Why did it happen? No idea. It was idiopathic, just a fancy word for saying don't know. What's going to happen going forward? Don't know. Don't really know. Fortunately for everybody else but us, dilated cardiomyopathy is really very rare. And the population of children that get it is so small that they just didn't know long-term what happens to these kids. About one-third get better, and one-third stay the same, and one-third get worse and die. And there's no way of knowing what group we're in. So we hit the jackpot in a lottery that we never asked for, and nobody ever wants to win. So thinking like a typical guy, guys think in mechanical ways, and you think, okay, you got a bad heart, take it out, put in another one, you know, we'll be on our way, this is be done with it. And but it isn't quite like that. Transplanted hearts don't last a lifetime. They develop hardening of the arteries very rapidly. They get diseased, and they don't last for a long time. The longest a child's ever lived with a heart was 13 years. So once you go that route, you're looking at doing it over and over and over again during a child's life. And so what the doctor said was, we really don't want to give up. We have a very bad situation here, but it's a bad situation we know, and you don't want to trade this for something that we don't know. And you don't want to choose necessarily what's behind door number two because it could be a lot worse. And they said, we want to stay here for a while. We want to see what we can do and just ride this out and see how long we can take this. And they threw all these cardiac drugs at him. They gave him Digoxin, and they gave him Lasix, and they gave him an ACE inhibitor, all these drugs that are prescribed to old people with heart failure. So we stayed like this for a while. His symptoms improved, but he still had the enlarged heart. And time went on, a couple months, and somebody, through our medical connections in the field, somebody had sent me a paper that appeared overseas about a clinical trial with a drug called metoprolol that was used in a group of people. I believe there were eight adults with dilated cardiomyopathy, and it actually reversed the cardiomyopathy. It was amazing. So we got this paper and took it to the doctor, and so what do you think about this? And the doctor's saying, I don't know, it's a small group, they're all adults, the follow-up time's really not all that long, I don't know, but okay, sure, let's try it. We'll do it. Now, the thing about metoprolol is that it's a beta blocker. It's used to treat high blood pressure, which is really not the problem with somebody with heart failure. And giving it in this case is sort of counterintuitive. It goes against common sense. It really took a leap of faith to think this could do something. Sort of like being on a railroad trestle and hearing the train behind you and making that quick calculus in your mind that you can't possibly outrun the train, and your only chance of survival is running directly towards it. But they decided they were going to do it, and they would wanted him in the hospital at the time. They'd have him hooked up to the monitors, get the baseline tests and all this. So they had us admitted in, and they couldn't even find the drug. The drug was not made in a tablet small enough for Philly. They had to. We lucked out. We were able it turns out that you can drink the injectable form. It doesn't get digested in the stomach, so it's perfectly fine. And we ended up doing that. And we waited. And what happened was that people throughout the country, this is before the Facebook, I mean, this was back in the analog days, through word of mouth, people, particularly my wife's side of the family, there was this tremendous outpouring of support and good wishes, and people sent us oil to put on them. There was a high mass in Los Angeles. There were prayer circles in Michigan, coast to coast, and people all over. I know I myself am atheist, rational, skeptical, secular humanist. My wife, on the other hand, comes from a very religious family. Her parents were missionaries. She had wandered away from the church, but from her side of the family, it was just all over the place. People sent incense and the chant that we're supposed to do. So, whatever. If it makes you feel better, sure, we can go for that. I didn't buy into any of it. Time went on, and we tried to. You gonna ding? Am I all right?
I'm trying to be respectful.
Okay. Time went on, and it really felt like this visitor, uninvited guest, was visiting on our family and trying to be normal with your routine every day and going to work and doing things, knowing in the back of your mind that the first sign that something could be going wrong could be sudden death, cardiac arrest. And through this time, we never felt sorry for ourselves, my wife and I. There was no self-pity or anything like that. We were quite the contrary. We felt very, very fortunate that we lived in this time and in this place, that we were in Baltimore, and that we had some of the best doctors in the world at Johns Hopkins, and there was never a question that there was somebody else we should see or someplace we should go or something we could do. We were doing everything we could, and we were at the medical center of last resort, and there was nothing else that could be done. And there was nobody better to have care for Phil because my wife's mother was a nurse and her sister was a nurse and I was a nursing school dropout. So, there was somebody who knew CPR with Phil 24 hours a day. And we went on weeks, went into months went into, it was almost a year and a half, 2 years later when we were in Hopkins for another sonogram, echocardiogram, and the technician got sort of choked up and had to leave the room. And he stepped outside and came back in, and he said, his heart it's normal size. The ejection fraction, everything is within normal limits. It's normal. And we just don't often get to tell parents this good news like this. Said seven.
That's the good news.
So it was through his experience, As far as we know, Philly was the first child to take metoprolol for dilated cardiomyopathy, and through his experience, other kids are taking the same drug and staying off the transplant list. And Philly, next week, will be celebrating his 21st birthday. He's absolutely fine. He's studying science at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. Although this experience exposed this rift between my now ex-wife and I, I can't blame her. It reinforced in her faith in God. Her prayers have been answered, and I can't deny her that. In my mind, it reinforced my belief in science, and that I believe that science worked. And my wife is convinced it was the hand of God that cured Philly, and I'm convinced it was the hand of Barry Byrne, who wrote the prescriptions for metoprolol. And Philly, being Philly, having the DNA that makes him, he has the characteristics of both of his parents, and he ended up being a church-going atheist who, year after year, was the only Goldfarb in the Christmas pageant. And when people tell me that, you know, he's a weird kid, I say, I know he experimented with drugs. Thank you very much.